So just, yeah, shoulders up quickly, all the way to your ears, and then roll it back down. And then with your lips, just do kiss, and then smile. Kiss, and then smile. There you go, recording the laugh, we've got it. I didn't see...
Is it okay if I do an instrument for a start?
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. I really want to do the sound bring back.
Us
yeah, 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 I really want to do this.
Lesson. Maybe that's something to tell them. Listen when someone's telling you something. You know, actually listen. Don't talk. Listen. Don't think in your head I'm going to have a defense back or anything. Just listen. Actually listen. When you're talking, I think it's really important for someone to listen to you and make you feel heard, make you feel understood. And that really helps people move forward and keep going.
Start with, what is your favourite sound?
I think my favourite sound is the sound of my children laughing. Definitely. Yeah. Laughter, particularly from children. It's a bonus if they're mine. Beats hearing them cry.
I would say my own laughter, because I know when I'm having a good day and I have a different laugh for different things, but I know when I'm really happy is how I laugh. And where the laugh is coming from. And that's how I know sometimes that I resonate with myself and I'm at a good place just because of my laugh. Because I've fake laughed, I've, you know, like put on a show to laugh and, you know, I've done all these things. But when I really laugh, I know how I really laugh. And when I get that sound, that's when I know, like, okay, I'm good.
What do you think Amina sounds like?
I mean, kind of in an office environment, kind of a bit of chaos, a bit of laughter, a bit of ruckus. Mm-hmm. I think if we venture out into like different services, mm-hmm. I think the helpline is a little bit more, well, I think it depends, you know, it could be a lot more emotional, it could be a lot more sensitive, it could be a lot of care, a lot of self-care, and you know, it can sound like laughter as well. I think it really just depends on the work environment, the day, the people, the colleagues.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a flow. To me, it sounds quite melodic and it can be a faster pace or a deeper pace, or at times it can be light and it can be kind of playful. But I think it flows, it ebbs and it flows is kind of what comes to mind for me.
And I think even in terms of teams, especially mm-hmm. our team, we flow.
Yeah.
That sound travels through all of us because mm-hmm. we all have quite a tight bond in that way mm-hmm. where we work together melodically, I guess.
Yeah, different paces, different styles, but it fits well together.
What kind of sound do you associate with the service users, or what do you think the sounds are that they're hearing?
That's a good question. I think for some service users, when they come in, the sounds could probably be quite chaotic, quite loud, quite disrupting, do you know, like kind of almost takes over a sense of someone's peace. And I would like to think that when they come into Amina and they, you know, they get to know the staff and they're getting supported, that noise kind of quietens down, or, do you know, finds its groove, if you know what I mean. But I would like to think that people come in here initially with a lot going on in their heads. And that's almost how I visualise that sound, to be noisy, disruptive, you know, you're not in control of it. It's getting in the way. But through coming to us and being supported through an organisation like Amina, I think that helps to mellow things down, might not get rid of the noise completely. There might be times when it's still quite loud, but I think the thought of knowing that you've actually got somebody else that's listening to the sound with you is what, you know, maybe makes it a bit more bearable.
The one thing I do like to say to all my women, and especially on the phone, is you can feel how you feel, you just don't have to feel it alone. So we're a national helpline that supports women with a lot of various issues. Some women have come to us to speak about divorce, to speak about, you know, marital issues, relationship issues. They've come to us to speak to different forms of abuse, so whether that's physical abuse, financial abuse, spiritual abuse. There's a lot of coercive control elements that they reveal. I would also say that it's extended family abuse and, you know, living with other families. I would also say that there's a lot of fear of racism. And there's a lot of Islamophobia that they want to speak about. There's a lot of language, you know, their immigration status as well, and how things like that make them feel.
We support Muslim and BME women in Scotland. So, you know, by and large, you are looking at women that are not white, you know, the women of colour. Usually English is their second language as well. We quite often talk about our client base as kind of a minimum, having like a what you call a triple threat. That's with regards to, you know, their race, their gender, and their religion. But that is very much at a minimum. We're not looking at things like disability, you're not looking at things like age, you're not looking at things like gender or sexual orientation. But statistics have shown that throughout the UK, BME and Muslim women are the most marginalised portion of society. They are the women whose voices do not get heard, they have no platform, you know, and there is a real lack of awareness, I think, about their rights, do you know, and what their entitlements are. A lot of that is wrapped up in what a woman's immigration status might be, on what basis she's arrived to the UK. So that very much can underpin a woman's experience. And AMNA tries to readdress a lot of those balances or imbalances.
So I do come from a male-dominated household. And growing up in a very cultural environment, I didn't have a voice. You know, it was very, you're seen, you're not heard. So that gave me its own fuel and empowerment to want to do something to make a difference, not just to myself, but to other women, because I feel we empower people as well. How we are, you know, sometimes people look at us as an influence. You know, they see that person has a voice, I can have a voice. So that kind of led me to the path of, I actually started as a volunteer here. So I volunteered on the helpline, and by doing so, it just gave me all these, you know, the transferable skills and the interpersonal skills that I really needed to communicate with these people and to really relate to their experiences, because I come from the same background. And I guess that just gave me a lot of empowerment to want to make a difference and to want to give these women a voice and to let them know. That's, I guess, something that the helpline is really good for, is the fact that it's an anonymous element sometimes. There is a confidentiality thing as well. You know, you can share your voice and you'll know you'll be listened to. You won't be told, okay, stop talking, or, you know, what are other people going to say about what you're saying? You know, we don't address these kind of issues here. You know, you keep these to yourself. It's okay, that's what you're experiencing. Let's explore that further. How is that making you feel? And really then ask them, you know, what would you like to do about it? And, you know, making them feel in control and giving them that control that they've not had. And I think that's why I have a lot of passion into what I do, and the fact that I really want to make a difference to these women, because I don't want them to be silenced. Like, I feel like you should be making noise. If anything, I think that's why I laugh more. That's why when I talk a bit louder, because I've been silenced for so long. I don't want to stay silenced anymore, and I'll make a noise in any kind of element and aspect that I can, and I bring that to my work. I think once they've caught a voice, I don't want them to lose the voice. So that's why we do get repeat callers, you know, people that want to continue having that voice, having being listened to, having that safe platform, that safe space. So we really want to encourage that and make sure that, you know, that they do feel really supported here.
You identify so much in the clients that we see. So we are women of colour, we are women, you know, of different heritage, and, you know, if you're a Muslim, you have your faith in common, or even with women of no faith as well, you can still draw out kind of similarities of experience there. I think also, like, my parents were first generation migrants that migrated from Pakistan to here, so it was kind of part of that first generation where a lot of the things that we did growing up just felt very natural and normal, like, you know, translating for your parents, making phone calls, helping them understand forms and letters and things like that. So you've kind of grown up, because you've got the privilege of being born in the UK and with your citizenship and obviously your language skills, of advocating for people around about you. So it's always felt kind of normal, but I think at the same time, you really get to appreciate the barriers that things like language really cause. Language is such a powerful, powerful barrier for people, but it also equally, language can be quite liberating as well. It just depends on kind of how it's been used. So I think that was really a core part of it, of just trying to really readdress the balance of the inequalities that we've all seen growing up. This is all coming from a lived experience perspective as well. Do you know, some of us have experienced harder times than others, but on a whole, we have that minimum level of understanding of what it can feel like to be a marginalised community in the UK, you know, and how difficult it can feel sometimes to have your voice heard. So, I think in a nutshell, it feels a bit like a responsibility, you know. This is part of what we do. You give something back. You do feel like you're in a bit of a unique situation because you can see both sides of it to a certain extent, you know. You see that there are agencies that do try and improve their practices, do want to be better at kind of reaching out to more kind of marginalised communities. But then there's change involved to be able to do that as well. And I think we can speak from a position of power because we've experienced those things and we can see those things from both kind of angles. So while it is about supporting women and helping to empower women, it's also about ensuring that, you know, particularly statutory agencies have got an understanding of what their role is and what their responsibilities are, and a lot of the time what their duty is as well. And it's about holding them to account for that as well at times, you know. It's not part of our natural makeup, particularly within the South Asian community, to ask for help. So going and asking for external help out with your immediate family circle is actually something that probably doesn't come very easily to a lot of people. But despite that, I would say that, you know, when you feel like this is actually something that I'm not able to manage by myself, that's when I would say you pick up the phone to Amina. I don't think there's any right or wrong time in which to do it, but I think there's a point that comes where sometimes you acknowledge that I'm not actually able to tackle this on my own, and I maybe need some help or support with it. And that could be to do with the smallest thing or the most fundamental issue. I mean, it, you know, it all kind of varies, but this is why we talk about empowering women so much, because the decision has to come from them. So we are very much about respecting choice, respecting people's timing, and our thing is about empowering them with the right information. So we tell them what it is that they need to know, what they've asked to know. We make sure that they are fully aware of what their rights are in any particular situation. And that can be like from a statutory perspective, also from an Islamic perspective as well. Faith is so deeply embedded in all of our lives and underpins every decision that I think that most Muslims make. And for quite often for women, if it's something really fundamental to do with your family, your relationship, your marriage, your parents, you sort of instinctively want to know that your actions are not going to displease God in any way, or you're not going to bring any additional difficulties upon yourself. So we provide that service within the helpline as well. We have an Alima who's like a female scholar, and she runs a surgery every Tuesday, and she's there to answer any Islamic based questions that women might have. Because although we are Muslims, a lot of us are, and a lot of us, some of us aren't, we're not equipped to give faith based advice. So that's why we have the specialist service available there for women.
A lot of what I learned about women's rights, I didn't know before my role. And I think I would have just swifted through life, not even realising misogyny undertones and things of the way people are talking to me. So I think when they are kind of exploring that with us and I tell them about their rights, I realise I have those rights as well. they're using their voice and it empowers me to then use my voice. It's hard to be the first one to do something. Like, people are telling me it's not okay, but in reality, that's okay. And I think that's important.
And in our kind of community, in South Asian community, the whole idea of is it, and is it being honour, is talked about so much. Do you know, if a woman leaves a violent relationship, she's broken the family's honour. But the man who perpetrated the violence, you know, there was nothing dishonourable about his actions. So it very much is a label that seems to be attached to women more than men. We bear such responsibility for this collective is it that you might have, do you know? And it's something that nobody asks for. It's actually something that's just placed upon you, do you know? It's a great way to control women is when you attach something to honour, because the last thing you want to do is disrupt your family's honour or your is it in any way. In the UK, we are not great at explaining things. You know, the information is not always at hand. It's not always available. It's not always available in the right languages. So it is a real struggle to try and sort of navigate your way through living in the UK. But these women managed to do it really, really well. Do you know, and that's what's so admirable is that despite the challenges that they've got, they don't give up.
Is there a saying in your own language for that kind of thing? Like
having him with?
Yeah, himmat is probably himmat. Yeah.
Having strength. Himmat. So that just means having strength.
You'll hear that within conversations, like you might say to somebody, you know, to have more himmat or have greater himmat, and it's kind of universally understood to be strength, resilience, you know, grit, all that kind of stuff about just kind of hanging on to a certain extent. And it's always used with women. It's such a female-based word. Very few examples would have picked up in him had been used for me.
I think the same thing for sabar.
Sabar as well.
Sabar, yeah. Means patience. I've only really heard it being said to women. You know, your husband's causing you issues, or just have sabar, just have patience. You know, God will get you out of this situation. Mm-hmm. God is telling you to be patient and be calm. This is your test, as if people mm-hmm. are telling you this is your test. Mm-hmm. And you just have to bear with it, meaning that you can't do anything about it. Just have patience.
So I think by and large, when a woman is talking about any difficulties that she might be facing and the response is to have sabr, some people might interpret that as being, you know, just hold on and grit your teeth, find your way through it, get your head down. But actually, when it comes to the faith, sabr's literal meaning is patience, but patience doesn't equal suffering. And people quite often misunderstand that. So it's about patience, that God will help you find your way through your situation. That is how I translate sabr to be. And that's, I think, our understanding at Amana as well. When we speak to women, we will tell them that standing up for yourself, fighting against that injustice, you know, ensuring a better quality of life for yourself, for your children, that is what sabr is. And sabr is about having that firm belief and holding on to that firm belief that, you know, your way out of this situation will come. You just need to take a step. So it's not about being still, it's actually about momentum for me. Do you know, it's about movement and it's about change and it's about having things moving. So I think now we're kind of reclaiming the word.
Sabr.
To me, sabr is like, just keep going.
Yeah, you know, it's like moving,
that, you know, it might not be at the same pace. You might slow down sometimes. But it's about, like,
keep going.
Not stopping, yeah. I think. Every woman that you meet, you'll kind of learn something different. No matter how big or small that hurdle might have been, I always feel that sense of, gosh, you know, this is a woman has come to another country, it's completely and utterly unfamiliar to her, has left her close circle of love and support back home behind her, is trying to carve her way into a whole new life, a whole new way of being. So there's always that admiration, regardless of what the woman's situation might be. I still admire them greatly, that the courage that it takes, you know, to either pick up the phone or to walk through our door. I maybe relate that, a lot of that, back to things like looking at my mum's experience growing up, you know, even my gran's experience. Most of their adult lives were formed, you know, in a completely different continent, completely different way of being. But actually, despite all the odds, they made a home in a completely foreign country, created a community within that. Within that community then, you know, made sure that there was things there that would benefit the community for generations to come. So, you know, it's just really sort of standing back and looking at actually women's achievements, which are huge. That's what always kind of astounds me, that actually this woman has so many barriers that she probably isn't even aware of herself. But yet, despite all that, she's got some sort of fire within her to keep going. And that to me is really inspiring. But every woman that you meet here, that you'll come across, be they part of the helpline or, you know, the women's friendship group, or, you know, they're coming in to do like a fun activity, they've all got something special about them that's very easy to kind of recognise, I think, when they come in. The best way to contact the Amna Helpline is to call us, and our number is 0808 801 0301. The helpline is available Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can also go on to our Amna website, which is mwrc.org.uk, and on there we have like a chat facility as well, so if you didn't feel comfortable in talking to somebody, you could use our chatbot and you can talk to one of our advisors through live chat, or you can email us as well, and all the contact details are on our website. I wouldn't say there's a particular right time to do it, but I think the experience that we've had is quite often women sometimes do wait till they're in that point of crisis mode, you know. I mean, for anybody that's wavering, I would say just pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone and call us, you know, and you'll see straight away in terms of how the service is, how well trained our staff are, how well informed they are as well. Confidentiality is the number one matter of importance when it comes to women that we speak to. And that's something that we hold in really high regard as well. So, you know, don't hesitate for whatever reason that you might be holding you back. Just pick up the phone and just call us, and you'll get a really culturally and religiously sensitive service. You'll get a very confidential service, and you'll get a very person-centred one as well. We keep the women at the heart of what we do. We wouldn't be here otherwise.
अगर आप एक औरत हो और आप एक डिफ़िकल्ट सिचुएशन में हो, फिर आप हमारी हेल्पलाइन पर फ़ोन कर सकती हो. नंबर है 0808 801 0301. अगर आप चाहती हो हम फ़ोन पर बात कर सकते हैं. अगर आपने ईमेल करना है ये भी हो सकता है. हमारी वेबसाइट पर एक लाइव चैट होता है और आप एक एडवाइज़र से बात कर सकती हो. अगर आपने अनोनमस रिमेन करना है ये भी ठीक है. सब कॉन्फिडेंशियल है, किसी को हम नहीं बताते इन्फॉर्मेशन.
Think of a message for somebody who is a man who might be hearing this.
I just want to say, do better. Collectively, please do better.
Yeah. Listen, but I think also, like, do something. Because I think most men will acknowledge, yeah, there's an issue within the community, and there's an issue with how women are being treated. And, you know, it's unfair and it's not right, and it's having a detrimental impact on our community and our future generations. But I feel like sometimes that's where it stops. There's an acknowledgement, but sometimes you get that sort of idea where people will be like, oh, I see geek or suck at them sort of thing. Like, what can we do? As in, what power do I have? I can't change anything. But actually, it's like, no, you can change so much. So I think it's also about, but listen, but then it's also like, well, get it at the same time as well. You need to get what women are saying to you. You need to get and really understand the messages that are being put out there. about how women are being treated, and it's about really then, you know, taking ownership of that within your circle of influence. All men are like women, we're all connected to somebody. Nobody was born into this world without having connections. Our collectivism is actually what makes us all so human, is that we can all, you know, identify on some level with one another. Do you know, sometimes it goes back to that thing of, you know, everyone's got a daughter, everybody's got a wife, a mother. But yeah, but then everybody's also just a person. We're all human beings. We all have the right to be treated with dignity, with respect. Do you know, all those basic elements of what makes us human. It's part of our faith as well. So if you bring it back full circle, men are meant to be our protectors. Do you know, in the more traditional sense, the men are meant to be our providers. But if we're living in fear of our men, do you know, what does that say about, you know, the dynamic of that relationship and how those kind of systems are working? It's about everybody taking ownership as much as for men, also for women as well. Do you know, we all have women that we are connected to. You know, we'll have sister-in-laws. Maybe one day we'll become mother-in-laws ourselves. So it's also looking at our own actions, how we treat people within ourselves as well. And I think that's the bottom line, is that there's individual responsibility at every level. It doesn't matter who you are. There's always an influence that you can make, and there's always a change that you can make as well. So I think that's really important, and for men to understand the influence that they have over the younger generation of how boys are being raised, what values and opinions boys are holding about women. It's so important that they actually have a good role model in terms of basing that on. Particularly young boys see their mothers being treated today as how they're going to treat their wives tomorrow. We know that. So we all have a role to play.